All right, I'm in the studio with Christoph Zajac-Denek, who is my very special guest. We are going to be talking to Christoph about some projects that he has going on. Christoph is very busy with a lot of projects. Two of the latest ones are what you need to know about. One is a feature film, Sasquatch Sunset, which is opening on Thursday, April 16th at select movie theaters. And also, there is a film in which Christoph stars, he's featured, and that is called Standing on Water. That is something that's taking place as part of the Freep Film Festival. So those are two of the latest things that we'll be talking to Christoph about. Christoph, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Liz. It's lovely to see you and be here virtually with you in the studio.
I love it. You know, you're virtual right now, but what we're going to have happen very soon is you will be in Detroit in person for some events that are taking place. So let's talk.
I'm so stoked.
It's really exciting. I'm really excited for you. First of all, let me just give a quick background. I mentioned the two things that you are involved with currently, but some of the other things that you have been involved with on film is something that you've done, or I guess you could say television. You were Ike the Spike Stettler in Twin Peaks, the most recent rendition, which is pretty awesome. You also have a podcast called I'm Kind of a Big Deal, featuring specifically stories about dwarfism, for which you are a huge advocate. And I first met you as a musician, a drummer in the Hard Lessons years ago. That was amazing. I loved you from the start, and I'm just so glad that we've been friends since. And it's been such an honor to watch you and your path throughout all these years.
Oh, gosh. I'm blushing over here. Thank you so much, Liz. That's such a sweet introduction. Yes. I remember being in that studio and with you, I think it's like 20 years ago now. Holy smokes.
I think so.
And I was so nervous and so green, and you were just so sweet. And I was like, I want to be friends with her. And here we are, we're friends. And it's like, I'm so grateful. You're awesome. So thank you so much for having me and being such an amazing friend.
Well, I seriously, it's a pleasure to have you as a friend, and I'm honored that you would call me a friend. And it's also been so wonderful to watch you and your career path. You have been from the time, shortly after the time that I met you, you have been dedicated to acting. You've been dedicated to putting yourself out there in one of the most difficult professions out there. I know, because I've done voice acting as well, and you've done on-screen acting, facing obstacles that anyone would face. And then in addition to that, there's dwarfism that you have put into the mix. That is something that is an additional, perhaps, obstacle, but how do you view it?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a blessing and a curse in some senses, and then maybe it's a little bit of an extra curse in some senses, because I'm very proud and fortunate to have had the career that I've had so far. A lot of opportunities that have come my way have been opportunities that are really strange and unique, but they also don't show my face. And I realized that a lot of the shows or roles that I would be offered, they weren't really human roles. They were kind of one-dimensional. And I had a lot of fun playing all of the trolls and crazy opportunities, you know, that have been a lot of demons. There's been elves, there's been munchkins, there's all these different characters. And it kind of took me a while to realize that the roles that I am offered, they don't really honor my humanity or the humanity of the people who look like me. Other people that I see in this world that look like me that aren't elves and leprechauns, and they're great people, and they're creative, and they're unique, and they have families, and they have loved ones, and they have children, and they're just like people. They are people, you know, and so I really enjoyed all of the roles that I got, because I like to do stuff that's unconventional and that's weird, and I love to embrace all of that. But I also want to incorporate stuff that authentically represents my experience as a human, because I think that's really the best way to have exposure and to have people understand about difference, specifically around dwarfism.
That's actually a really good place to jump in to talk about the Sasquatch Sunset and the role that you play in there. And I don't think I'm giving away anything by mentioning that you're one of two people that appear throughout the entire film. You have an arc and a storyline to your character, which was really beautiful to see. How did you embrace that role?
Well, yeah, I'm thank you so much for those kind words. I'm really, really proud of Sasquatch Sunset, and it was such a fun experience. We needed some information on how to approach this role, and the directors sent us some ape videos of how apes interact and fight and have relationships and eat and just their mannerisms and their movements. And so I got that in my brain. And then also my character is the child Sasquatch because I'm shorter. And so I'm kind of portraying this childlike creature that might be between 5 and 10 years old. You know, it's art. We don't really know. I wanted to show up as childlike and innocent and needy and rambunctious and curious as I possibly could. And it's so helpful to have 2 hours of makeup every morning and a massive Sasquatch suit to put on.
2 hours.
two hours of prosthetics and painting and hair and fur and stuff. And then we put on a musculature suit and then a fur suit. So it's really tough to take things seriously when you're dressed so elaborately and so beautifully in these Sasquatch costumes. We did steps, you know, so we watched these videos, then we had Zoom movement coaching sessions, and then we spent a couple of days in Eureka, California on location in an office building in Eureka, learning how to be this missing link character between, you know, apes and humans. And then so once we got to set, all of the technical stuff was there. It was, you know, we knew our relationships, we knew our vocalizations, which there's no dialogue, there's no humans, there's no language in the movie. There's a lot of communication, but all of those other elements are not seen. Honestly, this is the most fun I've ever had on any production ever. It was just mind-bogglingly incredible.
Was it one of the most fully formed acting roles that you have had?
Yes, absolutely. I worked every single day on the production, which is incredible. My character is in about 90% of the film, and I had to have distinct relationships with all of the characters. You know, like with Jesse's character, we're kind of playful, and he's kind of coming into his own, as you will see in the film. But he still interacts with me on a childlike basis. Riley is obviously the motherly figure to me, and that's very evident. You'll see that in the film as well. You know, I go out on my own, but then I still need to have the motherly figure. And then my relationship with Nathan, you know, he's the alpha Sasquatch in the mix, and we do still interact, but he's kind of more interested in other exploits, and a lot of which is mating. So
that's true. You know, but a really interesting part is the take on the Sasquatch. Sasquatch is kind of like this concept that you could say it's debatable, I guess. People have come up with, right? Others would say that Sasquatch exists. But I think no matter what, the concept of a Sasquatch, the Sasquatch is misunderstood. But a way that Sasquatch was handled in this film was the idea that they're out in the open and unseen, but the relationship that the Sasquatch has with that, meaning, do they care? Does the Sasquatch care that they're out in the open and unseen? It's kind of like this concept of they want to be hidden, right? Or not. So it's addressed kind of interestingly. It's so hard to come up with questions about something that I don't want to give away, you know, what's happening and how everything ends in the film.
Yeah.
But I do think that the perspective informs. Does the Sasquatch want to be found?
So I think what's beautiful about the film is it's told from the perspective of the Sasquatch. So many other Sasquatch films or films like that include Sasquatch they're all told from the perspective of humans and how the Sasquatch impacts the human's life. And in this film, you see from the Sasquatch's perspective, even though we don't ever encounter humans, we see the impact of humanity and we see the impact of technology and we see the impact of excess and convenience and other things that are encroaching into nature. And I think, you know, it's interesting to have the perspective from the Sasquatch, which is so natural in this film. Like it is nature, that they are out in this natural world, and that's what they know. And, you know, I will say there's this, one of the first big scenes that you see us, you know, you see the Sasquatch's introduction to nature as we come across a road. And that just kind of blows our mind, it blows the Sasquatch's minds. And we really, as this family of Sasquatch, we don't know how to handle that. And so the Sasquatch is just like, react to it. They try to dominate it. You know what I mean? Because this is their world, and this is so unusual and foreign to them. They have a moment, we will say, that is kind of shocking. And I think it's ended up in a lot of reviews about the film. But I think that perspective is really beautiful when you see yourself as a human reflected through the eyes of a Sasquatch, and then how what we have made as humans, you know, can come back on us.
I love that scene, and I think you nailed it right on the head. It's really about the reason why it's shocking is because all of a sudden we realize it's not about us. You know, it's about the perspective of the Sasquatch, mm-hmm. or the perceived mm-hmm. perspective, or whatever's happening here. So it really is a great way to just kind of check our perspectives about what's happening Absolutely. In this world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, you know, actually a great way to start talking about Standing on Water. This is a documentary about you and your life, and that was something that, when was that made exactly? Was it made a couple of years ago?
Yes, it was made, I believe it was finished in 2022,
okay.
The end of 2022, yeah.
And Tommy Corey made that as part of the Self-Worth Project. It's really nicely highlights the advocacy that you've been doing, the different things that you have struggled with, and the things that you've overcome yeah. as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was so honored to be called by Tommy. He's made about a dozen of these films, and they're just so beautiful. I say that he highlights folks doing things people who are doing things who don't look like they should be doing those things. So he has a wide range of different individuals that represent some aspect of difference in society. Their unifying idea is that they all love nature, and they all love to be in nature, and they find themselves in some sort of natural surrounding. And yeah, for me, it's this film is about my life and surfing and dwarfism. And I've been obsessed with surfing for 30 years. I loved it so much when I was 14 years old and living in my mom's basement. And in the winter, I would just read Surfer magazine and imagine that I could surf on the ocean. As a little person, I'm 4'4" tall. I've had 2 reconstructive leg surgeries and a spinal fusion. Surfing does not come easy. I don't think it's something that, you know, I ever expected to come easy, but I just really wanted it to be a part of my life. And it's such a big part of my life. It's really informed my self-confidence and my identity and my ability to believe in myself, you know, and being in the ocean is big and scary, and it can be crazy at times. And I've been in some situations that have been crazy, and I've survived, not totally unscathed, but that's life. And surfing just has my heart, and I'll be obsessed with it forever, I think.
That's actually the second way I met you, so to speak, was the surfing aspect, is when I was living out in Colorado and you had been driving through and you mentioned, hey, can I stop over at your place? I'm on my way over to surf in California. So yep. I need to stay the night so I can go the next day. And I was like, wait, what? You surf? That's absolutely incredible. And I had no idea that you had been so dedicated to the idea of surfing until then. And then as I got to know you more, I realized how you were dedicated even more, waking up at 4 or 5 in the morning just to get yep. out to catch the tide, which is incredible.
It's so beautiful. Yeah, getting up that early anymore is it's tough. Sometimes I go later, but you know, I can't. It's kind of indescribable how the feeling of being in the ocean catching waves while the sun is rising. It's really incredible. And sometimes I go at night on a full moon. I'll just be out in the water by myself, surfing under a full moon. I used to say that surfing has changed my life, and now I say that surfing just continues to change my life.
Oh, that's amazing. We're talking to Krzysztof Zajac-Denek, who is doing a couple of things in Detroit. One is the Sasquatch Sunset film. It's opening up on
Thursday the 18th is okay. The first. Nationwide, it's on the 19th, but yeah.
And then also, we're currently talking about something taking place as part of the Freep Film Festival, and that is a showing of Standing on Water that you're taking part in. One of the things you mentioned in Standing on Water is that you don't want people, if I've got this correctly, to walk a mile in your shoes. That's not necessarily what you're asking, but what is it that you are asking your audience to do?
That's a great question, Liz. I go back and forth with this a little bit, but I've felt like it's a little bit of a fool's errand to try and put yourself in someone's shoes so much. For me and for folks that want acceptance for their existence with dwarfism, acceptance and grace, I think, are the things that I would benefit from and the most, and folks around me. I think trying to really find out what it's like to be in my shoes or anyone's shoes with dwarfism is it's kind of like I can't walk in somebody else's shoes and really know exactly what it's like. So I think listening, understanding, trusting, you know, there are a lot of times when I talk to folks and I'll bring up the fact that I have a disability and they'll say, bro, you drum and you surf and you act and you've done stunts. Like, how do you have a disability? Well, those things can all exist at the same time. Like, that doesn't mean that, you know, I wasn't born with skeletal dysplasia, which, you know, has caused me to see a dwarfism specialist since I was 2 years old and have multiple surgeries on my skeleton. I'm very, very fortunate as a person that, you know, can be very active and live this lifestyle. Like, that's definitely true, but that doesn't mean that I don't have a disability. And so I think, you know, just listening to folks, you know, when they tell you about what their experience is and just having the grace to accept what they say and understand that it might not be exactly what you thought it was, and that's okay. We don't need you to know every single thing that I go through. It's exhausting for me. I don't want to like wear anybody else out with that either, you know? Yeah, because I think, you know, too, it's your own identity as well. Like, I want all my friends and loved ones to show up as themselves and not some version that they think that I want or need, you know? I want to listen to my friends as much as I want them to listen to me.
That's great. So on the other side of that, what advice would you give to a young person with dwarfism?
Oh, man. I mean, there's so much. I think this is a really tough question. I think the one thing is let yourself be you, you know, don't be afraid of yourself. I've dealt with so much self-denial, and I've learned that it's actually like manifested in self-hatred, and, you know, I haven't accepted myself, and it's really tough to want or desire or demand acceptance from other people when you haven't accepted yourself. Like, that kind of doesn't really work, and you really have to figure that out for yourself. And so I think what I would say is, like, find the ways that you can love yourself, find the ways that you can honor yourself and accept your own self in the best ways that are for you.
And when will you know your work is done as an advocate?
When I'm dead, I don't know. I think it's just ongoing, you know? Like, I went to Hollywood yesterday and I was walking down the street and there was someone who was, you know, high or drunk or something like that at 11 a.m. and they were asking me, like, if I was a midget or not. And I think, you know, it's never gonna end. I think that's just how difference is, and I honestly believe that we all, as adults, we're just children who have more years in our lives, and we're all curious. And I would never believe anyone who would say, oh yeah, I'm not curious about dwarfism. I have dwarfism and I'm curious about dwarfism. I think it's a massive curiosity. And if we are, you know, as kids, if we're not able to exercise and understand those curiosities and ask questions, you know, I'm so open. If anyone wants to ask me a legitimate question and they're not drunk on the street and, you know, are you a midget? Like, I think I'm open to everything. I will literally talk about everything to anyone. I don't think it's going to end. I think it's something that, because even with myself, I'm learning more things that I have to work on and more things that I want to get better at and explore. I have goals along the way. Like, I want to write films and create films and create shows and create stories and put them out there and books and things like that. So, you know, and all that stuff takes time. So like, as much as I can get done before my time is up, that's the goal.
Has your podcast, I'm Kind of a Big Deal, done everything that it needs to do? It seems like it's on pause at the moment.
It is on pause at the moment. And that there's a part of me that breaks my heart about that, because I love that show so much. I love the community that I started with that show. I would love to restart it. I actually have interviews that I haven't edited, and I want to get even more and more stories out there. I'm a bit of a completist, so I feel like try to not pay attention to to not have making my show. It's tough when, you know, I'm struggling to be an actor. I'm struggling to make ends meet sometimes and find work. And the podcast is very demanding when it comes to, you know, finishing episodes and producing it, because I do everything myself. And I would love to work with a production company or have some sort of producer or support with that. But I haven't necessarily found that just yet. I really hope I can bring the show back, because it's brought so much joy and awareness, and I've learned so much from talking to my people, and I think that other people would as well.
I think it's incredible, and it's I think a lot of people have learned a lot about the situation simply by listening to the stories of people involved, and
it's been
a wonderful contribution in addition to all your other things. I have one more question for you. What were these incidents you mentioned? Did you mention you had dangerous incidents in the water with surfing?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Can you tell us about one of them?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. One time I was, one of my surfboards that I was riding has a pintail, so the tail of the board comes back into a very sharp point, and I fell off a wave, and I popped up above the water, and the surfboard bounced back. And it hit me right below my nose, just above my teeth.
Oh, boy.
And busted, like it just broke the skin. I mean, I was an eighth of an inch away from knocking my two front teeth completely out. There was another incident where I was out in the waves were probably like 8 to 10 foot in Ventura. I caught some of the longest and fastest rides I've ever gotten. There were long lulls in between the sets, and I got cold, and so I decided that it was time for me to go in. So I started to paddle in, and then a set of 8 monster waves came. I was definitely far enough from the shore where I was not going to be able to make it to shore before the waves, and I was in the impact zone where the waves were breaking, and I was receiving all of the impact. And I got hit with 4 waves, and my leash broke that attaches my leg to the surfboard. So my board went straight into the rocks, and I was just out in the water a long ways from shore, and just I was so close to panicking. I've loved the water, and I've been, you know, swimming my whole life, and I just kind of had to calm myself. And I would see folks riding by on these massive waves, and they would fly by me, and then the white water would just hit me in the face and knock me down, and the current would drag me. So it took me about 10 minutes just to like gather my thoughts and paddle in. But yeah, that was one of the craziest moments, for sure, because you're just out there and there's a pier that's nearby and the current is very strong. And so if I would have just not taken action, I could have been in a position that wasn't so great and getting close to the pier. So yeah, just, that's a good one that I remember every now and then. I'm like,
yeah, the adventure never ends, but it probably makes you realize all the obstacles in life, but you know, in the end, you can overcome them. You know, you have overcome so much.
Oh, that's so kind. Yeah, I mean, and you know, you learn from all that stuff, whether it's you know, whether it's dangerous surfing situations or, you know, movies or films or whatever you're involved in. I think that's the one thing I appreciate so much about my life, is how I've been able to learn and adapt, and then the second, third, fourth time, it's not as scary, and you say, oh, I know how to approach this. Let's do it like this instead of the way we did it last time.
That's because you are a fighter, and you are a triumphant warrior. We appreciate,
I appreciate you so much, Liz.
Yeah.
That's so kind.
Appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And once again, we're talking to Krzysztof Zajac-Denek, who is doing a couple things to know about in Detroit. First of all, the feature film Sasquatch Sunset opens up on Thursday, April 16th at select movie theaters. And also there is the film Standing on Water, which is part of the Freep Film Festival. And that takes place, first of all, on Saturday, the 13th of April at Birmingham 8, and then later on Sunday, the 14th at the Michigan Science Center. I think I got that right. Did I get it right?
Yep. At the Birmingham 8, and yes, exactly.
Yep. Awesome. Okay, great. I mean, did I leave anything out?
I think, no, that's my whole life, Liz, right there. That's it. We
did it. That's just the start. You have much more you're going to be doing.
we covered it for sure. Yeah, thanks. I'll also just kind of mention, because we're getting close to promoting this as well, but I just participated in the Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge, and we made a film for that. So I will be posting and promoting that as well. It's a really great film challenge that my friend Nick Novicki puts on, and it requires somebody either in front of or behind the camera to have someone with a disability involved in the production. So it's a really great film festival, film challenge that he puts on, and I'm so stoked to be a part of it this year.
That's great. How can we find out more about that?
You can go to the Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge website and their social medias. I think it's just Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge on Instagram.
Okay, that's great. Christoph, always such a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for all that you do. And we're looking forward to seeing everything that you're going to be doing in Detroit coming up soon.
Thank you so much, Liz. It's such a pleasure. I'm big hugs until I see you in person.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Liz.